Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Sandra Johnson. I was listening to everything you were saying in the first half, and half of me was really envious, thinking of, you know, islands in the Pacific, and it was another piece of me that was really scared and wondering how on earth I would have managed on a boat for so long. So I want to know, what is the most difficult thing about living in a small space on a boat?
We never really found the boat too small. We were always so busy. We had to learn to navigate. I had to plan which countries to visit. Did we need a visa, inoculations? When were the winds favorable to visit? When to leave? Would we get U.S. dollars there, or did we need to bring them? Did we need to bring our own provisions? I had to find answer to all of these questions, and I searched magazines, guidebooks, letters from friends. We had all the charts and guides to visit New Zealand, but the long sail there promised at least a gale or two. Also, it was cold when you got there, warmed up for the summer, and then cool again when you left. We may as well be visiting Toronto via the North Atlantic. Eventually, we gave all our charts and guides away, deciding if we visited, it would be safely and comfortably by airplane, but we never did. During a passage, one of us always is on watch. I would make our meals, or if it was too rough, I would have Paul prepare a frozen item or tin stews, as I didn't feel like going down below when I was feeling queasy. We really hardly ever saw each other during passages, so no, we really never had a problem with the size of the boat.
So you really only spent time together when you were in port somewhere and
yes.
Exploring.
Yes,
but,
really.
Oh, I guess that solves the problem.
Which is most of your time.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was the longest period of time you actually spent at sea?
Our longest passage was 3 weeks between the Galapagos and the Marquesas Islands in French Polynesia. We had to leave an area because of hurricane season, which happened every 6 months. An exception to this was the San Blas Islands on the Caribbean side of Panama. It was everything we thought the Pacific Islands would be like, so we stayed there an entire year in case it wasn't. Also, our first year in Thailand, we stayed there the whole year through their heavy, rainy monsoon. I had a tooth infection to manage, and dentistry there was very reasonable.
It's funny how the different things govern where you're going to go, not just the sea and the
boat.
Oh,
yes.
So many other things. Now, you took a lot of photographs while you were on your trip. Are they a kind of a log of the voyage? Do you still take photographs?
I took photographs of all our beautiful destinations and, of course, every fish that Paul caught. So, yes, the photos were a kind of log of our travels. I sent some of my photos off to cruising magazines. Now I take photos of our changing seasons and flowers and animals. Last year I started entering my photos into the photo contests of the fairs of nearby towns with some success in winning prizes.
Oh, well done. Now, when you're docked in any place, do you sort of also have a routine for that? Do you do special things, or how does that work?
In 1993 in Panama, Paul bought a computer, a Radio Shack Tandy, from another cruiser who was upgrading, and he learned how to use a computer. Eventually, he got into jewelry of black coral and pearl shell, and then he met a fella who was a magician, and this fella consented to mentor Paul in magic. He would practice his card tricks on other cruisers and still does some for friends. He even visited Las Vegas when they had a magician's fair. I discovered reading for pleasure for the first time after reading only texts for night school. I devoured novels, and I kept up our correspondence with friends and family, and later got into digital photography.
So many things apart from seeing the world. That's amazing. Now, your first book that you just read a passage from, we saw some of the beauty of this adventure, that side of things. But I believe in your second book, there are some frightening experiences that you also had. Can you tell us a little bit about these?
Well, there were robberies in some countries, and luckily we never lost anything of importance. We had a near miss one night, but learned from it and kept everything locked down or inside. Also, murder and piracy occurred in other areas. A few gave up their cruising life after some bad experiences, but robberies and violence can happen right here at home. We were provisioned and ready to go through the Panama Canal for a second circumnavigation when we suddenly had to return home to look after my parents. Their health was deteriorating, and we eventually sold the boat.
Uh-oh, that's sad. Well, maybe you could read us a little bit more, this time from the second book, The Quarterdeck Chronicles.
Okay. In the anchorage at Margarita, Venezuela, we were waiting for a weather window to head north. A late storm was approaching and not veering north as they usually do. On the morning radio net, a poll was taken as to where the boats would go to be safe, as we were in an open roadstead. Paul and I announced that quarterdeck was going to Moshima, a hurricane hole on the mainland. A big Australian catamaran announced that they didn't know where Moshima was, but they were following us to be safe. As we were preparing to depart, a couple rowed over to our boat. They said they wanted to go with us, but that they had been robbed and had no radio to talk on, but could hear. They also had no radar or navigation system. We had just bought a new radio, and our other 30-year-old radio was too old to sell, but still had great reception and could get out fine. Paul went over and quickly installed it for them. Paul also collected old handheld VHF radios, as with the advent of the cell phone, people were getting rid of them. He gave them one. We also had a spare GPS we loaned them. We set off, but a mile out of the anchorage, our engine overheated. We called the other two boats and told them we were continuing on, but would be slow, under sail only. We could not make any headway if we turned back anyway, and certainly not if a storm was coming. We were painfully slow, but once beyond Coche and Cubagua, two small offshore islands, the wind picked up, and we were nearly at the mouth of the bay into Moshima when the wind died. It was a black, dark night, no moon. We had been there many times before when a storm threatened. We turned on the engine. On our boat, we lifted the floorboards in the cockpit to give headroom to our engine, which was right below us. Paul rigged a hose to our fresh water tap and fed water to the engine so it wouldn't overheat. We slowly made our way into the bay. I had no lights on to not blind myself, and I was trying to steer by instrument only, as we were both too busy to go out onto the bow. I also couldn't make a wrong step or I would fall into the engine room. If only our followers knew what bad shape we were in, but we were confident and kept going and anchored. The other boats quickly anchored. We were safe and sound. The next day, the couple who had the robbery visited us and told us their story. They had sailed from Grenada to Testigos Islands, part of Venezuela, but not a check-in point. A Coast Guard station checks the boats and allows them to stay for 3 or 4 days, but to move on to check in at a proper clearing port after that. They left after a few days and were halfway to Margarita. Her husband said there were some fishermen behind them. She was sunbathing with no clothes on, but had a shirt handy and went to reach for it. Four armed men were aboard before she could get a shirt on. They bound them, kept them down out of view, and took camera, wallets, radio, radar, dinghy outboard, computers, and GPS, and left. The couple were able to get out of their bonds and went into the cockpit. They saw paper towels strewn all over the cockpit floor, along with safety matches and a small jar of gasoline. It appeared that the matches wouldn't strike a light on the fiberglass surfaces, so the robbers abandoned the attempt. I said that was the worst thing about the whole episode, that they were going to be burned alive in their boat. They sailed back to the Testigos, where they knew friends who had just arrived as they were leaving. They had never been to Margarita before and did not know what to expect. A few days later, they and their friends came together into the anchorage at Margarita. That night, their friends were robbed in the anchorage and pistol-whipped. The friends left and went back to Grenada. The storm came a few weeks later. The tail end of the storm passed. The Australian catamaran sailed back to Margarita. We were still disabled, and that was not an option for us. The other boat who had been robbed came with us to Port La Cruz, probably more services and a better place to have things replaced.
Oh, well. No, I've decided. I think I'll go by plane. Anyway, thanks very much for joining us today.
Oh, Sandra. You're welcome.
So, Sandra, you had mentioned that your books are in ebook format. The first one, The World is My Oyster, and the second one, The Quarterdeck Chronicles. Where can people get them?
Yes, on my website, quarterdeckchronicles.wordpress.com, you can click on the covers of the books, and it will take you right to the Amazon Kindle eBooks, where you can purchase the books. And if you're a frequent Amazon Kindle customer, my books are free in their lending library.
Oh, wonderful. Can you give us the website again?
That's quarterdeckchronicles.wordpress.com.
Great. And Sandra Johnston with a T.
Yes.
Yes. So if you're looking it up. Great. And thank you very much to our listeners for tuning in today. If you would like to send us comments, queries, or suggestions, please write to us at wordonthehills897@gmail.com or go to our website at www.wordonthehills.com and leave a comment there. While you're at the website, you can check out any of our past programs because they are all archived there, so you can listen to them anytime and anywhere. So thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us again next week, right here on Northumberland Radio, Sunday, 1 p.m., Word on the Hills, and truly local radio 897.